feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank, broadcasting live every Thursday from the Woodlands, Texas. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me in the studio today is Dr. John Newbold. He's faculty with Sam Houston State University, and also Ray Sanders of Wood Forest Bank. And Ray, thank you for coming on the show. We're very excited to have you on today.
It's my pleasure, and it's an honor to be here.
And we are going to get into a little bit about your background and your bio in a little bit, but just first, I want to tell our audience that the Shrimp Tank is the internet radio show, and you might be a young aspiring entrepreneur that wants to have a business one day, but you could be a listener and you may have a business that is found traction already and that you're looking to get to that next level. This show interviews the best and brightest business owners all around the state of Texas about the do's and don'ts of building, growing a successful business. And along with the Sam Houston State Entrepreneurship Degree Program, we're going to plan an event in the spring, and this is where our panel will hear live pitches of new business ideas from young entrepreneurs. And this is not to raise investment capital, but it's for mentorship from our team of experts. So I don't know. The concept is a little bit like Shark Tank makes the voice, you know. Anybody like Shark Tank? So Shrimp Tank, Shark Tank, it's a spinoff. And so anyway, we're excited about that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the just the business climate of entrepreneurship here. Ray, you're involved in commercial banking. In fact, you teach a commercial banking class right here at Sam Houston State University, but you're also very heavily involved in the banking side. And as far as your career here in the community, you probably have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in business as much as anybody. Is that fair to say?
I think that is fair to say.
Yep. And so what are the trends that you're seeing right now? What sort of businesses are doing business with you in the bank right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In our bank, I work with a group of business bankers, and we deal with clients that have revenue somewhere between $3 million and about $20 million. And we may deal with construction clients. We may deal with cement contractors. We may deal with your local landscaper. So we have a bunch of different businesses that we do business with. And every time we go out and see a business, we try to make sure as a business banker that we're adding value to that business owner. And it's really a unique perspective that we take. You know, we try to go out and see our business owners at least four times a year. When we go out and call on a new client, we go out there and we listen first. We ask a lot of questions. We want to learn how their business works. And that's how we can determine the best solutions for that client.
You know, and I was thinking also, if you were going to start a business, I don't know where you would want to do it besides in Texas right now, maybe the Houston market, and why not right here in the Woodlands? I think we really have one of the best business environments anywhere in the United States. And it's also a challenge if you're aspiring to own a business. There's some statistics that say that 50% of the small businesses fail. Ray, is that good math on those?
That's pretty good math. It's very difficult. A lot of people have great ideas, and then they run out of capital very shortly after their great idea starts.
I've heard somewhere that that's one of the number one reasons that small businesses fail is that they're undercapitalized. Is that right?
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, as a banker, we go out and we try to lend to growing businesses. In the class that I teach for Sam Houston State University, we talk about lending to growing businesses. And so it's always important, as I said earlier, you go out and you visit the client and you learn about their business and what they do and how they make money and how can the banker add value to that. And what we're trying to do is go out and help that client leverage their business and grow their business by maybe taking on some debt, maybe helping them manage some cash differently and doing different things like that.
Kind of like a strategic partner, maybe to help them know their numbers and help them understand that and bring maybe some acumen to some entrepreneurs that may have the fire in the belly but don't really necessarily know the numbers like you guys do in commercial banking. So, Dr. Newbold, what's going on at the university as of late with the College of Business and the Entrepreneurship Degree Program?
Well, there's a lot of interesting things going on with the entrepreneurial program. We've got a new director in Jamie Collins.
Shout out for Jamie Collins, right? Yeah.
And we are involving a lot more of the faculty. You'd find in the entrepreneurial program that we've got a lot more of the faculty from the various disciplines participating and teaching the classes. So I'm a marketing professor, but you'd also get a finance professor or a banking professor in one of your entrepreneurialism classes. And we're trying, the last thing I'd say is we're trying to get a lot more involved in the local community and get a lot more real world exposure for our entrepreneurial students, get them out there working with local businesses and local entrepreneurs.
That's so exciting. The Shrimp Tank's an awesome opportunity for that. Catherine, I think this is about our 25th show this year. We had 25 shows, and that these shows are pushed around in social media and a lot of different circles, so we have a lot of listeners on the Shrimp Tank now. So shout out also to Jamie Collins. He's the director of the Entrepreneurship Degree Program. He's been a host on the show, and then also Dr. Chip Matthews. Okay, he's a professor at Sam Houston State. He's a CPA and attorney, and he actually sent me a little message that they in the classroom he's doing a little Shark Tank sort of thing coming up early part of November. So we're excited about that. Maybe we'll be able to be part of that. But what I want to say to a young entrepreneur is that you may not be maybe have your business far enough along to be what the banks would be considered bankable. Ray, you said that your group has a sweet spot of revenue somewhere between 3 to 20 million, but that doesn't mean if I'm a startup guy, I can still come to your bank and get help, right?
Absolutely. We have business bankers in our retail group as well as in our commercial group. And so if you come into one of our branches, someone will be able to sit down with you and talk with you. One of the things we always try to be is that, quote, trusted advisor. And, you know, while we can't tell a business owner how to run their business, we always try to give them some thoughts and ideas about how to improve their business.
Yeah. What do you think about, what do you think about, you hear about these little internet companies that start up, they get crowd or micro funding, and they put their idea out, and next thing you know, all of these people through social media, fund and launch. Is that a credible way to maybe get a start for someone that's got a bright idea, but they don't really have capital to get started?
Well, I have not done that myself, but I think that there are definitely some businesses that have had successful launch using some of these crowdsourcing or these crowdfunding situations. And it's a good way to get some initial capital, I think, without limiting the amount of your ownership that you're giving up, because those people sign up for a certain amount of a return, but they don't necessarily have an equity stake in your business, which I think is something you really want to protect early on in your business.
I wonder if those apparatuses are subject to, traditional sort of SEC sort of, disclosures. I don't know much about. By the way, we have a number of we're broadcasting live from the classroom. And just a question for any of our students. Have any of you been involved in crowdfunding or in any sort of way as an investor or otherwise? No? Okay. All right. Yeah, well, we're going to get you mic'd up and let you come tell your story if you had. So that's exciting. So, Ray, I just wanted to give a little bit of your background to our listeners. You've got an impressive resume as the regional president of business banking at Wood Forest Bank. You're also the immediate and past president of the Board of Trustees of the Conroe Independent School District. You're a lecturer at Sam Houston State University. You're chairman of the Interfaith, and then you've also been past chairman of the Chamber of Commerce and part of the Economic Development Partnership. And I'm just curious, Ray, how do you, how do you have a life and do all of these things and have a family and how do you do that? Or do you like put a cape on and go do all of this? How do you make all that happen?
I drink my 5-hour energy every morning just to start the day. No, I have 2 grown children and I have a wife. Next year I'll be married 35 years. She's a lovely woman. I think for me, it's what I love to do. When I go to work every day, I really don't go to work. I just love what I do. And if you don't love what you do, then it is work. And I don't consider it work. Every day I get up, I get to go help a new business owner help grow their business. And I love that. When I worked for the chamber as a chairman of the board, it was full of small businesses. And, I just love small businesses because small businesses are what create jobs in America. And I love that. And I love the fact that people can get out every day and say, I have an idea or I have a product or something, and I'm going to start a new business. And that's what I like to do, is I like to go out and hear business owners talk about what they do to make money every day.
That's exciting. And by the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank podcast. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay of our show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me live in the classroom today, and not in studio, but we are live in the classroom, is Ray Sanders and Dr. John Newbold of Sam Houston State University. So with that in mind, Dr. Newbold, you had a really good question that you were going to ask Ray that we were talking about a little earlier. I thought it was one of the best questions that we're going to have at the interview today. Well, you want to go ahead with that?
All right. Let me ask that question. I don't want to get into any of the current politics. I'm sure you're aware there was an election recently. So I'd like you to just imagine, Ray, if you got a phone call tomorrow morning from Donald Trump, and he wanted to ask you, short of repealing Dodd-Frank, what's the main one or two things that I could do, Ray, that would actually help unleash some of the businesses and some of the economic activity in the United States? What would you tell Mr. Trump?
You know, that's a great question, and I would definitely take his phone call. I don't want to ever get fired by him, but I'd love to talk to him. I think from a banking perspective, there's one big thing that could really help banks, and that is the Dodd-Frank Act. I don't think it should go away. I really don't. I think there's a lot of good things that came out of that to protect consumers, and that's important, especially in our business, because we always want to be transparent. But what can happen is a lot of times there's regulatory overreach, and it kind of gets out of control. To give you one quick specific example, there was a recent Fed board meeting in the Dallas area, and a local president of a bank of $25 million in assets. He has 6 employees, and the day that the bank examiners came in to see him, the bank examiners brought 8 bank examiners to his 6 employees. So a little bit of overreach there.
Worked him over, huh?
Worked him over real well. And so, you know, one of the things, I think the big thing for us as banks to be able to help lend out would be, let's ease up a little bit on the regulatory concerns. The other one is, and I think we all know what that is, and that's, let's help reduce the tax burden of our small businesses. You know, they have to file state reports and national reports, and it's just a lot of things. And when they're out there trying to run their business every day, they don't always know exactly what those reports are, when they're due, and things like that, and it's just a concern. And you can really get yourself in a bind if you don't have someone there to help you do all of that, but all that comes with a cost.
Yeah. So I'm curious, Ray, without going into too far into the weeds in this, that, through this heavy hand of regulation, I've heard a statistic somewhere, I'm sure you know it better than I do, but I heard somewhere that somewhere across the nation, 15,000 community banks are no longer, that they just could not stay afloat with all of the regulation, and they got absorbed. And is that a somewhat accurate statistic?
That's a somewhat accurate statistic. I recall when I got into banking in the late 80s, there were probably 18,000 banks. And today, I think there's 3 to 4, maybe 5,000 banks. And so there's been a tremendous consolidation right now because of the cost of complying with all the federal regulations. We have to hire people that do nothing but make sure we stay in compliance. And when that's done, that's great, but that costs the bank. It doesn't really bring revenue to the bank. And so if we could just ease that regulatory burden somewhat, I think what you would find is smaller banks, they just don't have the capital, they don't have the resources to be able to compete with bigger banks, and they're either going to get gobbled up or they're going to go out of business.
So for the business community, is it better to have more banks, more competition? I'm thinking that maybe, you know, this consolidation is less beneficial to business and the consumer. Is that fair to say?
I would say it is fair to say. You know, that you've got the big 3 banks that are out there, and they really control a lot of the market. And so you've got banks like Wood Forest. We're a $5 billion bank. We've got 743 branches in 17 states. But we're out there every day trying to help our clients. And it can get difficult sometimes with just going to those businesses and talking to them, and you find out, well, they actually have a lot of regulatory burden as well. And so it becomes a lot difficult. But we're of a size where we can make money and we can continue to be in compliance. A lot of these smaller banks, they just don't have that ability. And so what happens is their business model gets shifted somewhat because they've got to make revenue or they're not going to stay in business.
Okay.
All right. And Ray, just to follow up on that a little bit, if I'm the owner of a small business and I'm looking for some help from a bank, what do I need to look for in a bank? I'm assuming that not all banks are the same, that they have different business models and things. And so how do I, as a small business, determine what bank might be the best fit for me?
You know, that's a great question. And I think the answer is you need to interview several bankers and find a banker that understands your business and understands what you do. A lot of bankers today have sales goals and they have things they have to get done. And what they do is they come out and push their products without really listening to what the business owner has or needs. And so that's one thing that we teach our bankers not to do. I just read a great book called The Noble Purpose by Lisa McLeod. And in her book, she talks about how doing the right thing for the client will eventually lead to a great bottom line. And so we always work on trying to listen to the client. In fact, we have a saying at our bank, we don't sell anything on the first two calls. So when you go see a client, you don't even talk about products or services unless the client brings it up. Because our idea is, I want to learn what you do. I want to learn who you are. I want to connect with you on a personal level and build a relationship over time so that you will never leave me.
It is a relationship. And with that in mind, I'm going to give a shout out to Leah. Okay. Oh, you know who, Leah Bhaskar.
Yep.
And I've already said, I just like this woman so much. She's been so helpful to me. She's at Wood Forest Bank. This might be my plug for Wood Forest Bank, but I already told Leah, if you ever change banks, Leah, I'm going with you because she's that good. And I think that's what you want to have in relationships with people.
You can call her on the phone and she's going to answer the phone and take care of you. And that's what we're all about.
That's right. Well, okay. So, Ray, again, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm really intrigued with this question. And I know that maybe you could teach a whole class about this one question, but, if you could squeeze it down to like 1 minute, I'd like to know just your comments about, in general, the concept of the cost of capital.
Yeah, you know, the cost of capital really is just what return are you going to get on your assets? And, you know, there can be different costs of capital. As Dr. Newbold said earlier, even with crowdfunding, you're giving up a lot of equity a lot of times. And so, you know, equity in the future is revenue out of your pocket. And so, you know, there's bank capital that's a whole lot cheaper and a whole lot less expensive. I try to tell the students in my class, you know, we position ourselves as bankers to lend money, and we just get a small interest rate of return, but we provide that entrepreneur a opportunity to get a large return on their investment out there each and every day. So I think cost of capital has many, many different values. From an equity perspective, it can be quite expensive. From a leverage or lending perspective, it can be quite good to go out and get bank lending rather than giving away your company.
That's a good point. I had a client brought me in a apartment development proposal, and he showed me this proposal, and they're promising about an 18% return. And I said, well, the cost of capital concept is that the reason that this apartment developer is offering you the opportunity for an 18% return is that there is a risk associated with this investment that's commensurate with that return. So I read him the first page of the disclosure, that they have to, and I said, this is the part that everybody blows over, but you really ought to read it because this stuff.
Those prospectuses are important.
Yes, because if they could line up and go borrow money at the bank for, you know, 1/LIBOR or something like that, you can bet they'd be there. Giving up 16% is a lot for the developer to give up. So I think one of the core precepts of that concept is that you know, risk and return, they go hand in hand. Another way to say that is that there's not a free lunch. So, Ray, what about careers in commercial banking? Is that a wide open field? I know we have students in the classroom, and some are getting their finance degrees, and some are maybe considering commercial banking. What are your thoughts about a career in commercial banking? I know you've been in it for quite some time, and
I've been in the banking business for 32 years. And I when I got out of high school and went into college, I wanted to be a banker because the banker in my town where I grew up was the local hero. He was the one that was contributing to all the community events and doing things like that. And so I always wanted to be a banker. And so I went to school and I never changed my major. I wanted to be a finance major and wanted to go to work for a bank. I got out of college and went straight to work for a bank. So I've been in banking for 32 years. Commercial banking is an awesome place to be. We have a lot of different opportunities for bankers to come in. We have usually they come in first and become a credit analyst, and so they're spreading financial statements and they're crunching numbers every day, and then those credit analysts report up to a portfolio manager who manages a group of bankers' portfolios. And then we've got the relationship managers. They're the ones out there every day selling the company and letting our businesses know how we can help them improve.
Now, do you need a special degree to come into commercial banking? And I know there's all kinds of certifications that you get along the way, but if a student was looking to go into that field, what degree program would they want to focus on?
It would be in business. I've hired people with entrepreneurship degrees, accounting degrees, finance degrees, and banking degrees. And I think just having a good core business understanding about accounting and economics and finance. I think the first night I told my students here in class, when you're a banker, you're a lawyer, you're an accountant, you're an economist. They want to know what's going on in business, and they always ask their banker, what are rates going to do? You know, and there's questions about your banking, the notes and agreements that you sign. And so there's legal questions that have to be answered. And so it's a lot of knowledge, but I think banking is very much an apprenticeship program. You get into it and you learn from other bankers, and you grow in your area of expertise where you like to be a banker.
So I'll ask a question on behalf of the students. Any of the students, would you like to know, can you make good money in commercial banking? Is that a fair question? Anybody that maybe is considering a career, what's the money like for someone as a commercial banker? You don't have to tell us your salary or anything
okay.
like that. But.
All right. That's good. I appreciate that. Well, I think that's a great question, and starting salaries in banking actually are on the rise. It's really interesting. I was at a conference 2 days ago, and there was a discussion about the 34-year-old banker who had about 12 or 13 years experience. They can't find them. They are the most expensive bankers around, because when you've got 12, 13 years of experience, you've been in banking for a while, you can go out there and command definitely six figures. And that's just a base salary, and then you get 30 or 40% of your base salary and a bonus each year if you do a good job for the bank. So I think, today's starting salaries for credit analysts are probably somewhere between $40,000 and $65,000 on the low end. The 40 is going to be at a much smaller bank, a bank our size. I think we start them in the some mid-50s to low 60s. And so, like I said, you can, within a matter of a few years, you can get up into six figures easy. I've had several of my students in my past classes come to work for our bank and other banks, and they're very happy being in the profession.
Okay, that's exciting. Producer's telling me we need to go to a commercial break. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, the internet radio show for entrepreneurs. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We have some more questions for Mr. Ray Sanders. The Center for Entrepreneurship at Sam Houston State University operates as a hub for cross-campus entrepreneurial initiatives. Moreover, the center provides a portfolio of new extracurricular programs to generate excitement about entrepreneurship among students across all disciplines. The vision of the Center of Entrepreneurship at Sam Houston State University is to be a nationally recognized center of excellence in free enterprise-based entrepreneurship education. That was a mouthful. A major emphasis of the center is amplifying the positive impact of entrepreneurship in rural and or underserved markets. For more information, visit our website at www.shsu.edu. And we are back live in the studio with Ray Sanders, live in the classroom, I should say, and also Dr. John Newbold. He's faculty of the College of Business at Sam Houston State University. This is our special commercial banking episode. We're having a deep dive with Ray Sanders of Wood Forest Bank. We've talked about cost of capital, and we've talked about careers in entrepreneurship, and and I know John's got a couple more questions. Ray, I wanted to ask you, if you could just comment basically on how banks make their money. My mindset on that is that there's a word called arbitrage, where you guys essentially, you're borrowing money at a certain rate, you're lending it out at another, and you have these real estate corners in these different places. But what's the mainstay of the source of income for a bank?
Sure. The mainstay of a bank's revenues is coming from what we call margin, or net interest margin. What we do is we take in deposits from customers each and every day, and then we turn around and lend those deposits out in our local communities. So if you're a local church and you're trying to build a new building, we're probably lending your parishioners money right back to you at that church to help build that building. And so most of the money that's made today on a bank comes from the depositors, where we take those funds and turn around and lend those out at a small margin. And the other part is we take excess funds and we may invest them overnight or in short-term investments. And so there's some interest income that's earned from there as well.
Okay. So,
and I've got a question for you, Ray. I'm thinking that from the perspective of the banker, you see a lot of businesses come to you who are looking for help with their strategy and help with their capital requirements and things like that. So over the 30 years, you've probably seen a lot of businesses come in that you've helped, and they've been very successful. So what I'd like to ask you about is not so much the business model of these businesses, but what can you tell me about some of the personal characteristics or the success habits of some of the people? So since you've seen a long parade of them, what sort of things do you see in entrepreneurs and in some of your business partners that lead you to think, well, they're going to be successful?
You know, that's a great question. I think there's several key pieces there. The first one and foremost is we've got to have somebody who's ethical, moral. I think they've also got to have a lot of passion and drive for what they want to do. They're not going to take no for an answer many times, which is actually good because, you know, we need to sometimes challenge normal ways of doing business to make them better and to improve them and make them more efficient. And so I like to talk to entrepreneurs and small business owners that are maybe sometimes creating a new product, maybe improving an existing product. Maybe they're just out there trying to disrupt a model of some business that's going on to create some momentum to get into that space. A couple of things that I think are real important is honesty, integrity. I know that kind of sometimes goes without saying, but I've seen just the opposite. I've seen small business owners come in who don't have that character, and that's something in our class we talk about in our commercial bank lending class, the 5 C's of credit. The very first C of credit is character. If you don't have good character, it's hard for a banker to lend you any money. So one of the things that's interesting, and a lot of people don't know this, but every time banks lend money, one of the first things that we do is we go check you out. And so we run you through a program, and we check out and make sure that you don't have any federal tax liens or you don't have any problems with any other governmental agencies or anything that might be a problem for a banker. I've always tried to tell people, someone who will cheat on their taxes probably isn't going to pay you back. So you got to be careful and make sure that they're doing the right thing every day. And so we do that. And again, that's one of the things we do when we go out and we talk to our clients and we talk to our new businesses. We talk about them. It's fun sometimes. I know that bankers are kidded about playing golf and making deals on the golf course. But, you know, I can learn a lot about a guy who plays golf. If he's going to cheat on the golf course, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't cheat on the golf course, but I have terrible scores.
In summation, you can't make a good deal with a bad guy, right?
That's exactly right.
Way to put it.
Okay. So honesty and integrity. And then, Ray, you guys have a successful bank. I think without going into Wood Forest whole entire story, that I've been in the Woodlands now for 20 years. I know that you're nowhere the bank now. You're much larger and vast of an organization than what you were 20 years ago. And I'm interested a little bit about what the culture is there, and I've heard you hit on this theme about, you know, the right people and integrity and all of that. Is this a culture that permeates through the bank, and where did that start? And if you could speak to us a little bit about that.
That's a really great question, and I love that question. I think Wood Forest has always had a great culture. One of the things that makes our culture different than a lot of other companies that we compete against is we have an employee stock ownership plan. Everyone in our company has the opportunity to own stock in our company and be an owner in our company. And in fact, today, 32% of our company is owned by the employees. And so they're our largest shareholder. And so each and every day when I come to work, I'm coming to work not as an employee, but as an owner of the company. And so when I make decisions and when everyone in our company makes decisions, they make those decisions because it affects their own personal investment in our company. And so that's important. And so one of the things I think is key in being an owner is, you know, it doesn't matter what the job is, we just do it. I recall during Hurricane Ike that we, you know, we had several branches down because of the hurricane in the Houston metropolitan area. And I remember the hurricane came in on a Saturday morning. And Saturday afternoon, we got together as executives and employees, and we met and we said, what can we do to help our clients, to make sure that our customers have access to their funds and have access to payment systems and whatever they need to do to help them out. I implemented a program. I was the chief credit officer at the time, and I said, nobody makes a loan payment for 90 days. Now, that's a cost to our bank, but you know what it is also is it's a great way to let our clients know that we care about them each and every day.
That's fabulous. Dr. Newbold?
One of the other things I was curious about, too, is what, over your 30-year career, what have you done to keep your edge? What do you do to keep yourself professionally sharp and up on things?
That's a great question, and I can tell you real quickly, it's also one that I talk about being on the Conroe Independent School District Board, and that is I read. I read a lot. I read a lot of news data. I read a lot of data about my industry. I read a lot of books. In fact, I just told you I read Noble Purpose. I just ordered a book and just received it. It's called Primed for Performance. It's a book about how to motivate people. And so, again, I lead a banking team of bankers. These bankers that range, I think I've got one that's been in the business 7 years, one that's maybe 5 years. I've got one that's 15 years, one that's 25 years. And so each one of those people is going to be motivated differently. And so as a manager, one of my jobs is to make sure that I'm motivating my sales team each and every day. And so I've got to motivate myself to be able to motivate them. And so I read a lot. I mean, really, I bet you I spend 10 to 12 to 15 hours a week reading. And so when we go into schools, that's one of the most important things we tell our students all the time is read, 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 read.
Knowledge is strength and knowledge is power. And you can get really busy in this, culture where we have all these videos now and we have, a lot of this stuff. And you can do, for me, I like audio books. I've always been an audio book guy.
Yeah, I was going to add, there are some great podcasts out there.
I've
heard about the Shrimp Tank. It sounds pretty good.
Since we're plugging the Shrimp Tank, don't forget you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. So, Ray, we've been in a strange anomaly period of time with historic low interest rates. I know if I come put $1,000 in your bank, you're not going to pay me very much for it. And that's just the nature of where we've been. Tell us a little bit about that. And I know that you don't have a crystal ball and you can't, I won't really ask you to predict or forecast where rates are headed, but what's been the impact to consumers and to bankers with these historic low interest rates?
It's interesting when I look back over the financial crisis of 2008, 9, and 10, rates have been down for a long time. And I think from a consumer perspective, if you have the ability, in other words, you have good credit, you can get out there and you can borrow at extremely low mortgage rates, auto rates, things such as that. However, on the other end, we know that rates can't stay where they are. They've got to move up. As our economy begins to grow, I looked at the jobs report today, in fact, as I was reading, and saw that the jobs report came in better than expected. So, I know the Fed is going to meet again on December the 13th and 14th. And my expectation from what I hear is that there's probably going to be at least a quarter point bump in December. They will meet again January the 31st and February the 1st of next year. The Fed meets about 8 times a year. And so they will probably begin to increase interest rates as long as the economy continues to pick up steam. If there's anything that falters that, then they may take their foot off the gas pedal again. But my anticipation is that you'll see a quarter point increase in December.
Quarter point increase. Well, interest rates have been low for so long, and like you said, that they cannot stay low. I think about some people. It's put the squeeze on maybe our older citizens who have been looking for some yield, and they really can't get yield. If they're in any high quality short term fixed income, the yield on that is extremely low. They may be reticent to go, let it all hang out in the stock market and possibly take a gut punch. A lot of people have been concerned about the economy, but maybe things are headed another direction right now. So I want to kind of get back to the community, to businesses, and talk about when a business owner or a prospective business owner comes in, does the bank require a business plan?
We don't always require a business plan. I've seen some that come in with business plans, and I really like that. It's really good. It gives me a quick overview of the business, what they do, where they plan to go, the strategic vision that the entrepreneur has. Again, a lot of times that's why we go out and visit with our clients at their business. As I tell my students, I go out and visit a lot of businesses, and I can tell you I've been out on a manufacturing floor that's as pretty and clean as this floor that we have here in our classroom. And that gives me a perspective about that entrepreneur. When I go out and I know it's a manufacturing and it's going to be dirty and they're, you know, they're going to have some debris and things like that, and I see that floor as clean as my home floor, I know that there's some quality there. And I always appreciate entrepreneurs that do that. So we like to go out and we like to visit. We like to see what's going on. Also, I remember an entrepreneur one time, I'm walking around with him, and one of his employees threw a piece of paper on the floor. And he said, "Excuse me." The entrepreneur did immediately went over there and had a talk with the employee and said, "Pick it up and take it to the trash can." And it was just, it's that mindset. You know, there was a book called Disney Magic written years ago. And I remember the story of the chief operating officer walking around with the person who wrote the book. And the chief operating officer went over and picked up trash and took it over to the trash can and put it in the trash. And the author asked, "Well, don't you have people that do that?" She said, "Yeah, we've got 15,000 of them." And that's the kind of...
That's a culture. That's a cultural
mindset. It's a culture.
Mindset.
Absolutely. And yep. So that's what we like to see. When we go out and see entrepreneurs like that, I want to do business with them.
There's a new book out on Disney called Lessons from the Mouse. And it's about that unique experience, but it's the total employee buy-in. So this is for Dr. Newbold. I'm just curious, at the university level, are there, within any of the programs, are there any modules or classes or about business plans? I know that J.J. Hawley, he's the president of the Chamber of Commerce. He co-hosts the show with us sometimes, and he said that the Chamber offers some equipping and some tools for business owners. But any are you aware of at the university level, any instruction on how to develop a business plan?
Yeah, I know that they go over that in a number of different classes. In the accounting classes, I know they go through how to not only write one, but how to interpret one when you see one. I know, for example, in the capstone marketing courses, we have the students learn about a business model and at least know how to put together a pro forma P&L and talk about how the company makes money.
Yep.
You know, Dan, too, to give another plug to Sam Houston, they have a small business development center. And, you know, entrepreneurs can go to the Small Business Development Center and they will help them work on writing a business plan, talk to them about strategic vision and what that company is going to look like someday. And I think that's another good tool
that's a
for
great
entrepreneurs
point.
To use.
That's mm-hmm. That's a great point. So, Ray, in your career, so you said it's 32 years. Is there a mentor that in particular stands out for you? What's your thought about mentorship and having a mentor? And anyone that you can think of that has been a real influence in your life as a banker?
I recall early in my career, a banker told me, "You need to find a mentor." And I said, "Okay." And I just thought that was someone that I could, older, that knew more than I do, that I could go ask questions of. But what I learned is it's much more than that. And I think the mentor for me has always been our current chairman of both the bank and our holding company. His name is Robert Marling. I tell everybody I went to the Robert Marling School of Management. You know, he taught me so much. You know, just to give you a for instance, we don't tell our customers no, we tell them how. You know, because people don't care what you can't do, they care what you can do. And so we try to, again, create a culture where we tell people what we can do. They may not like what we can do, but at least we tell them what we can do. And so I remember Robert used to always tell me that. He used to you know, drive me around, and we would talk at times. Or I'd walk in his office and sit down, and we would chat. And it was always really important, and it was always real valuable. I remember one time he asked me a question, and I answered the question immediately. And he said, "You answered that with great spirit and pride." He said, "You're wrong, but you answered it with great spirit." And you know, and I learned something from that. I learned that, you know, I can say wrong, I can be wrong and sound confident, but next time I need to know my numbers a little better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great shout out to Mr. Robert Marling, and I hope he's hitting them straight out there in Park City, where he likes to hang out. Hopefully he'll get a chance to hear our podcast. So, Ray, do you guys do SBA lending at the bank?
We do. We are a preferred lender through the Small Business Administration. You know, what that means is we've done enough small business lending that basically the SBA will bless any loan that we approve. And that's a nice place to be. So, you know, small business lending has its place. You know, a lot of times you have young entrepreneurs, or I mean young in their business, not young in age, come into the bank and they say, I can't put 20% down. I can only put 10% down. And the only way a bank will do that is if they have a small business administration guarantee. And so there's that. And sometimes, you know, someone will come in and say, well, I want to borrow against equipment. And we'll say 7 years, and they say, oh, I need 10 years. And so, again, the SBA has ability. They will guarantee the loan and allow us to go out 10 years. So I really like SBA lending. It gives us kind of a credit enhancement and an opportunity to help some clients that may not always fit the conventional bank lending model.
Okay. And, Ray, we talked early on the show about all of the commitments that you have. How many hours a week do you work? I'm curious.
Well, this week I've left my house before 7 a.m. and haven't gotten home before 9 o'clock any night this week. That's kind of a little bit atypical, but I would say on an average week, I'm working 70 hours a week, okay. Normal. And, you know, they're not all in the office. I work in the office, and then I go home and I work. I work on the weekends. But again, I said early on, it's not work for me. It's fun. It's, you know, when I'm helping a client, That's my jazz. I just love doing it.
That's a great lesson. And for all the students out here, I'd say that this year I've interviewed 25 successful business owners, entrepreneurs, and CEOs. And one thing is a common thread that I can tell you is that they all work really hard. They all love what they do. I don't know. There was a book that came out by Timothy Ferris a few years back called The 3-Hour Work Week. Mm-hmm. And that sold so many copies, okay, of this 3-hour work week. And it's because, I don't know, I guess people want to believe in a fantasy, you know, yeah. That you can have a 3-hour work week and people want to believe in something that's total fantasy. It's like having a retirement plan is to win the lottery. It's a fantasy. So the reality is that you're going to have to work a lot. If you find something that you love, it's not work.
And yeah, I was just going to add that. If it's your passion, it's something you love to do, it's really not work.
Absolutely, yeah. Every day.
Okay, so I'm getting some major stink eye from the producer here saying, hey, we got to bring this show together and wrap it up. We're actually cutting into Ray's classroom time. I want to thank our guest, Ray Sanders, and Dr. John Newbold for being on the Shrimp Tank podcast. Don't forget, to our listeners, you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. Ray, how would someone get in touch with you if they wanted to learn a little bit more, or maybe wanted to come in and talk to you about banking, or one of your associates? What's a way to get in touch and contact with you?
Sure. I'm not big on social media, but I am out on LinkedIn, so you can contact me through LinkedIn. It's Ray Sanders, Wood Forest National Bank. Also, you can just contact the bank and ask for me. I'm one of the longest standing employees there. I've been there 30 years, so somebody there will know who I am and be able to find me.
Yep. Are you still at 1330 Lake Robbins Drive right there?
Yes, our corporate headquarters. I'm still there.
Okay, very good. So we know how to get in touch with you, and we know where to find you. And also, don't forget to learn more about the Entrepreneurship Degree Program at Sam Houston State University. The website is shsu.edu. So we want to thank you, Dr. Newbold, and also Ray Sanders for being on the Shrimp Tank. And we will see our listeners here live next Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real. This life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie, keep going. You know the saying, you can reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'm a lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.